Armin Katayan is with us. We continue talking about this fascinating, insightful book called The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big Time College Football. Let me ask you about some of these other truths that I mentioned a little bit earlier. Athlete students, not the other way around, student athletes, work essentially full-time jobs with no share in the millions of dollars the schools make. Now, you and I both have talked to athletes who said that they've run into the University of Tennessee Stadium, to the big house up in Michigan, look around and see over 100,000 people and wonder, where's mine? And I've also often suggested, Armin, that if I was an athlete, I would tell them, I'll tell you what, I will pay my way to college, but you give me a percentage of the money that's created by my playing on the team. I think that this is coming to a head with what we have seen about athletes now starting to resent and also open up and take positions about this with protests. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think it's absolutely coming to a head. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that there's multiples of not tens of millions, but hundreds of millions and billions of dollars pouring into college football, whether it's the ESPN contract for the college football playoff, which is $413 million beginning next season to televise just the semifinals and the finals. And as you say, running into stadiums that are jam-packed with 100-plus thousand fans and seeing your jersey sold in the student bookstore for $85 and you get nothing, and the absolute arms race that's going on in facilities and building these Taj Mahals of football locker rooms and football facilities and player lounges, and working, you know, 41-plus hours a week in football-related activities as compared to 38 hours per week in classroom-related activities, and saying to yourself, look, I don't even have enough money to put a full tank of gas in my car. I can't take my girlfriend out because I'm down to my last $15, and I don't get my stipend or my Pell Grant until next month. I don't understand, and I think it's high time that people smarter than me sit down and figure out a way to deliver the full cost of education to these athletes. And I understand all the Title IX implications, and I understand that, you know, you've got non-revenue sports that need their fair share of the pie as well. But it's high time that somebody, or whether it's multiple people, or it's time for a commissioner or a college football czar to take over this thing and come up with a plan where stipend can be provided to these players. Because as you said, this this All Players United movement, while it's still in its infancy, is, to me, evidence that there's an awareness now that is building. And whether they can do it because it's difficult, but whether they can pull something off that either shocks people or just opens up a debate that results in significant change being made, there is no question after 2 years of reporting that the single most valuable commodity in this entire system of college football are these 18 to 22-year-old kids, where the inverted pyramid with all the pressure and all the money falls on their shoulders.
I have a quote here from Arian Foster. He says, I think my check was like $87 a month in dorm rooms. You had meals Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday. You had to fend for yourself. I guess that's what $87 was for. At the end of the month, you don't have any money. Your family can't send you any money. A lot of those guys, 80% of the team, is made up of kids from the inner city. And Foster also disagreed that a free education was a just reward, saying that the education wasn't free because college athletes put in just as much work as professional athletes. I'm going to be rather harsh here. Do you see the system in college sports, and particularly in college football, a little bit like what they had in the South back 50, 60 years ago when they were picking cotton down there?
Well, let me quote Cleve Bryant, who was the director of football operations at the University of Texas, a.k.a. the janitor under Mack Brown. He described it as it's like slave labor. And I don't necessarily disagree with him at this point in time. No, we're not talking about slavery, and we're not making analogies towards what was happening in the South in the 1850s, but this is at a time we are coming to a tipping point, and I think we're coming to it much quicker than people realize, that with the pending college football playoff and the multiples of millions of dollars pouring into these regional television deals and into stadium expansions and everything else, that, as Arian Foster said, at the end of the month, you're trying to figure out how to live on $85 a month. I mean, these kids, at the minimum, should be, whatever the full cost of education is, if at Michigan it means it's additional $5,000 a year, what does that work out to over 12 months? Because these are essentially 12-month jobs. What is that, $400 a month?
Right.
I mean, it's nothing. But it would make a huge difference to these kids to be able to put a couple of tanks of gas in their car and take their girlfriend out to dinner twice a month. You know, and I don't understand. That seems to be lost, and I think it's lost because this avalanche of money is pouring in, and everybody's trying to figure out ways to divvy it up. Let me just give you one example. The National Football Playoff now, for the conference that wins, is going to get $75 million, the pool payout. Last year, it was about, under the BCS format, it was about $23 to $25 million. So you're tripling the payout to the conference, the 14 schools and the SEC. Why can't some of that money be siphoned off, put into a pool, and then distributed as stipends to every athlete in the SEC? It makes perfect sense to me, but I don't know. I'm not hearing any of that stuff, and I don't. Maybe it has to go to the point where there's a walkout or a job action of some sort before this conversation is held. But I'm telling you something. Knowing what I know now, and I would not be surprised to see that in the next, if it's not this year, next year.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And for a number of years, Armin, I've been saying on the air here, what they need to do is they need to take a percentage of all the broadcast contracts, radio, television, network, and everything, put it into a fund, make it an annuity, and let the schools that can't afford to give every athlete, I figured it up, 150 athletes, generally speaking, on the average at universities. If you gave them what you were talking about, and the schools that could not afford it, could go into that fund and pull it out to pay their athletes, and you know as well as I do, they could have a car wash at the University of Texas on one weekend and raise all the money that they need to have to pay their athletes
right.
for a full
and,
year.
And it's a great example. Dave Brandon at the University of Michigan, their athletic department budget is north of $100 million, but the football program generates somewhere between 75 and 80% of that money. He is more than willing to take some of that $80 to $90 million that they generate through the football program and pay a stipend to every one of his, in his case, 886, I think, student-athletes. They would be. Nick Saban was in favor of it. Brian Kelly was in favor of it. These aren't guys who, you know, who are moderate voices. They're the most powerful people in the sport, and they're saying it's high time that these stipends come forward, stipends are paid. But I don't hear anything coming out of the NCAA, and I don't hear a word coming out of a college president's mouth. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but it better happen pretty soon, because this freight train is picking up speed as it's going down the tracks. And I don't, right now, after 2 years of reporting and a deep dive into college football, I can't tell you right now who's driving this train. I don't know who the conductor is, and I don't know who's in the engine room, but they better figure it out pretty quickly, because I don't know. I don't think anybody, including Mark Emmert, knows where it's headed.
Yeah, well, I don't think that they will figure it out, because there's too many powers, everybody dipping their hand into the bucket to get the money that they want to have. But let me just touch on Mark Emmert for just a second. I really have the feeling that the NCAA is an antiquated organization, and also there is nothing that they can do. There are going to be those schools. It reminds me of something a friend of mine said in the NFL to me. He said, the commissioner every day gets calls from owners saying, I need more money, I need more money. I think it's the same way with colleges and universities. They are now addicted
yeah.
to the television money, especially when you have the Pac-12 conference getting $3 billion. Everybody says, where's mine? And so
right.
nobody is going to show good common sense on this.
Well, that's game-changing. I mean, the Pac-12 is now giving each of these schools somewhere between $20 and $25 million, and that dollar figure is only going up. the Big Ten money in this next contract that they will get, there's talk of numbers that are $40 million a year going to these universities. And you're absolutely right. They have become addicted to this money because it's fueling this arms race. They said, okay, we can use this money to fund our debt load because we're going to go out and build more seats inside our stadium, put in more club seats, more luxury boxes. We're going to go out and hire a $3 or $4 or $5 million coach because we're all in on this poker game. And meanwhile, the athletes are going, wait a second here. I can do this math as well as you can, and we're still working our butts off. And we're not graduating with any great rates. But at this point in time, Mark Emmert, I've listened to what his most recent comments are. There's going to be a new organization, and there's going to be an entirely different kind of system in place in a year or two. But I don't really know what that is going to do to solve the systemic problems that now exist in the sport.
I agree wholeheartedly. We only have a couple minutes left. I do want to touch on something else that's a hot button with me, and I'm sure it is with you. The statement that players don't graduate and end their college careers, with broken bodies. Most people probably do not know that college scholarships are only on a renewable one-year basis. Can you talk a little bit about what you found and the travesty of this part of your report and your book?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, one of the things that Jeff and I wanted to do was to come up with what we would describe as sort of independent reporting, beyond what people see in the newspapers. And we and the reporters and some of the researchers working with us, we tracked all the season-ending injuries last year in the top eight BCS conferences and the two major independents, Notre Dame and BYU. And we discovered that there were 282 season-ending injuries in those conferences last year. That's a pretty staggering number. And then we go on to show and document cases of star players who were parts of national championship teams who are still suffering debilitating injuries, whether they played in the NFL or their career ended in college football. And you know, it's interesting, Ron, that the month of October, which is not all that far away, 35% of those season-ending injuries happen in that month, far and away the most significant number for that kind of catastrophic injuries. And it comes from the fact, in talking to the head trainer for the National Trainers Association, it comes from the fact that these kids have been working out all summer long. They've been in these intense conditioning programs. Then they go through these hellacious training camps, and then they start the season. And when October runs around, they're in the midst of their most intense conference play. So the injuries are a result of that. Their bodies are beaten down, they're tired, and that's where the injuries occurred. And there's no, like you said, these scholarships are renewable every year. And, you're constantly under pressure to perform. And if you are not performing, you're going to get run off. And they're going to open that scholarship up to somebody else who they believe is a better candidate to improve the football team.
We got 30 seconds left. Are you happy with the way this book came out, Armin?
Oh, God, I couldn't be any happier. This was the single most ambitious project of my life. I wanted it to sit on the shelf with the likes of Season on the Brink and Friday Night Lights and Instant Replay. And I think given the reviews and what people have said about it to date, I couldn't be any more proud.
Well, congratulations on it. I'm just starting it, but I want to absorb it because it's a lot of things I've talked about on the air here on this program, and you have finally captured it, you and Jeff together. So give him my best, too. And you're welcome here anytime. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It's a message that has to be heard, and you guys have done it very, very well. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, Ron. Can't thank you enough.
Armin Katayan with us. And again, the name of this book, check it out. It's called The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big-Time College Football. And Armin, of course, a lead correspondent for 60 Minute Sports, also has been a correspondent for HBO Real Sports and an 11-time Emmy Award winner. We'll take a break as we continue with more of you and Sports Byline.